You are listening to a sermon by Catherine Cooper, recorded on Sunday, January 18, 2015, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So today I would like us to start to look at the multiple ways that Paul used the word body in the few short verses we just heard from Corinthians. The word body is both singular and plural, and also both a whole individual, as well as referring to the flesh alone. These distinctions are critical to understanding the passage, but can frequently cause us confusion because of how we currently think of the body. There are a couple of ingrained dichotomies in Western thought that can affect our interpretation. The conceptual separation between body and soul, and the separation between the individual and the collective. We must examine our assumptions before we can live as whole people and as a whole community. Now, when I first started working on this sermon, I had not thought it would all hinge on semantics, or that I would wish so very much that I had taken Greek rather than ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics in college. I also did not know that my topic of the body would turn into two sermons when I started to write. In looking at interpretations of the body, we start to ask questions, such as, how are we to live as individuals? And how, as individuals, do we join in community? These questions are immense. And in writing, I have found that the ways to look at these questions and begin to answer them are as infinite as the people who ask them. So as Andre and Evan were kind enough to let me speak a second time, before I had even finished writing, much less delivering my first ever sermon, I've been able to break up my exploration of the body and these questions into two parts. This week, I want to focus on the singular body and the tension that arises in how we think of ourselves as individuals. I want to begin to look at how we are to live as whole people, undivided by dichotomies. In the second part of this exploration of the body, a couple of weeks from now, I want to look more closely at how we, a collection of individuals, form the body of Christ, the plural body. So first, when we talk about the body in a singular sense, do we mean this mortal coil or the whole of an individual? There's a common phrase that we use, body, mind, and soul, to refer to the whole of an individual, which shows that body, in our contemporary language, is not an all-inclusive concept. We feel a need to clarify when we are referring to more than our mortal shells. Though there is more than one source for this separation of the physical being from the essence of an individual, one critical contributor to the dichotomy was the philosopher Descartes. Though Descartes is famous for writing, "I think, therefore I am," he also wrote a logical treatise titled Passions of the Soul in 1649. In this paper, Descartes tried to understand and explain people's passions or emotions. The way that he went about it was to completely separate the body from the soul. His first logical steps in his argument starts with the statement that, quote, "To understand the soul's passions, we must distinguish its functions from the body," unquote. And it is from this declaration that the rest of his argument follows. Once the body and mind are separated, it is possible to see which entity is responsible for each of our actions and responses. This logic-based separation is known as Cartesian dualism, and it underlies many of our current assumptions. For example, accepting a difference between body and soul made it possible and acceptable for medical students to dissect cadavers. If the body is animated by the soul and retains nothing of the individual after death, as Descartes argues, then examining the body cannot hurt the individual now gone. Nancy Shepherd Hughes and Margaret Locke write in a classic anthropology article titled The Mindful Body that, quote, "In this way, Descartes, a devout Catholic, was able to preserve the soul as the domain of theology and to legitimate the body as the domain of science. This Cartesian dualism is similar to what the Corinthians were saying when they argued that gluttony and philandering are not problems of concern to the church because they only affect the physical body. These actions of the body do not affect the mind or spirit of the individual. Paul argues against this, saying that the whole of an individual is affected by these actions. When Paul uses the word body, he uses the Greek word soma, which at the time referred to the whole of oneself. There's a separate word, sarx, that referred to the flesh, though in some situations it is even translated as corpse, and sarx is the unanimated body. We only have one word, though, body, which makes the translation ambiguous, especially in light of how the word has changed since Paul wrote his letter. We must remember this, though, that when entering the church, you enter with your whole body, your soma. As Paul writes in verse 15, "Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ?" But as Paul reminds us and the Corinthians, your actions affect your spirit, and your spirit affects your body. They cannot be separated. You can choose to whom you are joined, to Christ or to a prostitute, but you cannot be joined to both. Your actions can join and they can separate. You cannot say one thing and do another. So how do we put ourselves back together again? How do we live as whole people? One beautiful illustration of an answer is from the novel The Education of Little Tree by Forrest Carter. The book is about a young boy who is raised by his grandparents and taught about how to live. One of the things that Little Tree's grandmother teaches him is about choosing which impulses to follow, those of the body mind or those of the spirit mind. Part of the passage is this. Quote, "Grandma said, if you use the body living mind to think greedy or mean, if you was always cutting at folks with it and figuring out how to material profit off of them, then you would shrink up your spirit mind to a size no bigger than a hickory nut. That's how you become dead people. Grandma said you could easy spot dead people. She said dead people, when they looked at a woman, saw nothing but dirty. When they looked at other people, they saw nothing but bad. When they looked at a tree, they saw nothing but lumber and profit, never beauty. Grandma said they was dead people walking around. Grandma said the spirit mind was like any other muscle. If you used it, it got bigger and stronger. She said the only way it could get that way was by using it to understand. But you couldn't open the door to it until you quit being greedy and such with your body mind. Then understanding commenced to take up. And the more you tried to understand, the bigger it got. Natural, she said. Understanding and love was the same thing, except folk went at it backwards too many times, trying to pretend they love things when they didn't understand them, which can't be done. I see right out, I was going to commence trying to understand practical everybody, for I sure didn't want to come up with a hickory nut spirit." Unquote. There are choices we make, things we say, and things we do. This is part of the reason that anthropologists can, sometimes, find jobs after graduate school. We are told to study what people do and what people say they do. When these differ, it's important to try to figure out why. As whole individuals, though, wouldn't it be better if our spirits and our bodies were moving in the same direction? Our body minds and our spirit minds in agreement. To practice with our bodies the spirit of our faith. It seems to me that in this way, we can work toward being whole individuals. So what does this mean for us in a practical, everyday sense? When Paul speaks of living holy, his main warnings are about gluttony and visiting prostitutes. These are not very applicable to us, at least in the literal sense. For the Corinthians, these warnings were against behaving as they had before converting. These behaviors to them were not things they might have thought about very deeply because they were so socially ingrained. So for us, we can read Paul's warnings as examples that we should be aware of how our cultural conditioning may cause division within ourselves. Maybe we should think about how much emphasis we put on our physical bodies, as our current popular media would encourage. Or maybe we need to be aware of how wrapped up we are in desiring our creature comforts, of wanting more material things that do nothing for our minds. But is being aware of these temptations enough? Some commentators have used this passage to preach asceticism, the denial of the physical body in order to focus on the spiritual. But I think that asceticism betrays another part of this passage, that we glorify God in our bodies, our whole selves, which includes the physical. So in our daily practice, we must find a middle ground, a happy medium between denying our physical bodies and wallowing in hedonistic pleasure. We should look for some things that unify our minds and our bodies. For me, dancing is one of these things. It is an expression of joy from the mind and the body. Another part of this purposeful practice is that we must also see each other as whole individuals. We can work to care for each other, the physical and the spiritual, together, not apart. And part of that caring requires the understanding and respect of another, the love of another, as Little Tree's grandma puts it, and listening to what is needed. The most vivid illustration of not knowing how to see whole individuals that I have witnessed was when I was working on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. The strength of this memory is partly due to its juxtaposition of caring and learning that I personally experienced. I was there with the youth group from Central Congregational Church in Providence, Rhode Island. As part of our work on the res, we made and installed beds in people's homes. We were also there to listen and learn another perspective from the Oglala Lakota, much as like what is encouraged in the Truth and Reconciliation talks here in Canada. While we were there, we were told about another mission group from an Episcopalian church also on the res. The elder who told us this story said that the Episcopalians were there to save people's souls. And when the Episcopalians asked what they could do to help and how they could interact with the people, they were told to go paint a wall in a field. If they were in the field painting that wall, they couldn't proselytize or bother anyone. The elder also said that that wall got painted at least once every summer. To the Oglala Lakota, proselytizing was not what they needed. They did not need more people coming to them and telling them what to think and how to live. They wanted people to listen to their story. They also appreciated practical help with building beds so that their children did not have to sleep on the floor. But someone has to listen, understand, and respect that difference of opinion about what is needed. Working with the Oglala Lakota and seeing the cooperation that can happen and how we could care for each other was one of the most memorable and formative experiences that I have had. We must learn. We must listen, understand, and love. We must think of the whole of an individual, not just the facet or facets that we see. And I find that these are things we must practice and continue working on and revisiting, because it can be so very easy to forget and to stop looking both at ourselves and at each other. Though practicing the art of understanding with the spirit mind and practicing this understanding with our whole selves is a difficult challenge, we can be comforted by the words of Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. God knows us. He sees our whole selves and understand. And as Little Tree's grandma said, understanding and love are the same thing. God loves us, and he has invited us to join him. So we should try to do the same. We should try to understand each other and ourselves as whole people. For surely, we do not want to end up with hickory nut spirits.